Welcome to Miss Maple Mysteries, a collection of cozy crime stories written and performed by Kathy McClellan, with production and additional voices by John Nolan. This story features guest actors Rosemary Nolan and William Balak. Episode 7, A Fine Romance, Part 1. Mabel suspects that a series of romantic picnics at the Princess Louise Falls could have sinister overtones. Little Jack Horner sat in the corner, eating his Christmas pie. He put in his thumb and pulled out a plum and said, "What a good boy am I." Chapter 1, Variations on a Theme. Scene 1, Jaden Lee meets a good-looking guy. When Ben Hegarty saw Jaden Lee, he knew she was perfect. Asian, petite, and stylish, with her shiny black asymmetrical haircut. Jaden's smile lit up her face. She worked until 4 o'clock most days, a teller at the Scotiabank in the Place d'Orleans shopping center. Then she walked north through the mall to the transitway. At 4:05 one fine day in early June, he met her on the walkway to the array of bus stops, with 2 takeout coffees. Hers had 2 creams and no sugar. He knew how she liked it because he'd followed her at lunch and heard her order. He wore his best lopsided half-smile. So charming, he thought, when he'd practiced it in the mirror, and his Adonis look. Sandals, beige drawstring waist chinos, and a tight black t-shirt over his sculpted tanned torso. With a toss of his tousled blonde hair, he hoped the outfit said, "Greek God." Casual, fit, graceful, irresistible. His opening line was irresistible too, and soon they sat side by side on a bus shelter bench, laughing and getting to know each other. He met her there again the next day, with a picnic in an expensive-looking wicker basket, and she agreed to share it with him at the lovely Princess Louise Falls, a short walk away. The falls were enchanting, and so was the meal. It included wedges of pita bread, liver pâté, hummus, strawberries, and sparkling white wine. He asked about her work and about her beautiful jade brooch, a gift from her late beloved grandmother. He said it hummed with her grandmother's gentle, benevolent presence when he held it in his hand. Then he closed Jaden's hand around it and told her to keep it safe in the outside pocket of her purse. He suggested they close their eyes and listen to the sounds of nature all around them. That surprised her, but whatever, she thought, and did it. They parted on good terms without exchanging phone numbers or any other humdrum details. She never saw him again. Only later did she realize that while her eyes were closed, he had stolen her grandmother's jade brooch. Scene 2. Nicole Paquette meets a mailman. Ken Hartford bought a few things at Canadian Tire and couldn't keep his eyes off cashier Nicole Paquette. So captivated was he by her bright, lively personality, short, sturdy build, and pixie-cut, light brown hair. He had dark brown hair, a pencil-thin mustache, and a charming, lopsided half-smile. A fit and friendly off-duty mailman in a light blue shirt and navy Bermuda shorts. He brought her coffee one day and invited her for a picnic at Princess Louise Falls the next. He borrowed her silver pen, a graduation gift from her parents, to draw a heart with an arrow through it on her palm, then suggestively stowed the pen in the breast pocket of her shirt. He had a surprise for her, he said, and asked her to close her eyes. Nicole made a face. "Seriously," she said, but complied. When she opened them, he gave her a small bouquet of wildflowers he'd picked just for her. He took her number and promised to call, but she never saw him, or her silver pen, again. Scene 3. Courtney Nairn meets a law student. Len Hernando chanced upon Courtney Nairn in the middle of her shift at Party Mart. Courtney was tall, shy, and demure, with long brown hair and glasses, and old-fashioned drop earrings from a vintage clothing store. Len had long red hair in a ponytail, jeans, an open-necked white shirt, a tweed jacket, and dark-rimmed glasses. A brilliant young law student. On a romantic picnic at Princess Louise Falls, he gently removed her earrings to have a close look in case they were part of a famous valuable collection he'd read about. Then he insisted she store them safely in her purse and invited her to join him in a special meditation, humming with their eyes closed. Brother, thought Courtney. When she opened her eyes, he was gone, and so were the earrings. He wasn't sure why he took those things, especially since he'd swiped them so smoothly and never got any credit for it. His time would come, big time, very soon. He would be noticed, admired, respected. Recently, he'd stopped to pet a little white dog tied to a bike rack while the old lady who owned it went into the bank. The dog was happy to be fussed over, but hysterical with joy when the old lady returned. A wave of envious fury swept over him. I should steal that dog, he thought. Give it a new master, a real master. But this wasn't the time. Instead, he managed to slip a tag off the dog's collar. When the old lady wasn't looking, he stuck it in his pocket. Scene 4. Paige Sauvé meets a dentist. And Mabel meets Paige Sauvé. I met a young woman at the pool, and she told me a story that sounded fishy about someone called Wren Hathaway. I was at the François Dupuis Recreation Center, a newer facility on Portobello Road. It's a little farther east than the Bob Macquarie Recreation Complex near me, but I love the pool's saltwater chlorinator. It's so much easier on your hair and skin than the older systems. I also appreciate the shallow walk-in ramp and the warmer water. The change rooms are very nice, with lots of room and, wonder of wonders, heated floor tiles. I joined a group of seniors for Aquafit on Tuesdays and Thursdays, hoping to improve my fitness and meet new people, but I found the group surprisingly unfriendly. They'd been doing Aquafit together for years, they had their friend groups, and they seemed too focused on their workouts and each other to welcome newcomers. I enjoyed the exercise, though, in the buoyant water, and on Tuesdays, I loved looking over at the mums and babies in the warmer, smaller children's pool. After the workout, I showered with the others, toweled off, stuck my head under the hairdryer for a few minutes, and headed to my usual bench by the lockers, where I saw an older Aquafit lady speak sharply to the young mother of an inquisitive, cooing baby. Can't you read? The young woman, her full figure wrapped in a towel, her streaked blonde hair just barely long enough to tie back, shifted her gaze from the baby.
Sorry?
No cameras anywhere in the pool area, especially in the change room. Why don't you try living in the moment for once?
I was just taking a picture of my baby. They're so adorable in their new swimsuit.
They? I only see one.
I'm waiting for them to be old enough to make their own choices about gender, so I use they-them pronouns.
I've never heard it. Anything so ridiculous in my entire life. That's a pernicious form of child abuse, if you ask me. With that, she flounced off, naked and saggy, but still radiating dignity and high dudgeon. The young woman leaned in to nuzzle the baby's soft pink neck and hide her tears. Her shoulders shook with repressed, silent sobs. I'm sorry about that, I said. We'd never exchanged names, but we'd chatted and shared the same bench after swimming once a week for 6 weeks, and I felt protective Would you like me to hold the baby while you get dressed?
No, thanks. I'm good. They're fine lying on the towel on the bench while I get dressed. Sorry to be such a wimp. It's been a tricky week.
I started to say something, but hesitated. Not used to using gender-neutral pronouns. Is anybody sleeping through the night? She chuckled ruefully.
No, not for a while now. I'm on my own, the dad's not in the picture, and I also work to pay the bills, so one way and another.
It's hard to catch your breath, let alone get any shut-eye, I said, taking my clothes out of the locker and sitting to put them on. She nodded, strapped on a nursing bra, and pulled on an oversized t-shirt.
And to top it all off, I can't find my charm bracelet. I like to wear it to remind myself of the good times when, you know...
When things are difficult.
Yeah,
she said, wiping away another tear. She wiggled into black leggings and set about covering the baby in Vaseline.
Sensitive skin. The doctor says to baste them up like a turkey.
I don't think I've ever seen a more beautiful baby, I said, sliding my running shoes on. And I'm sure you'll find your bracelet. You're very organized, but it's hard to stay on top of so many new things. She kitted the baby out in a gender-neutral sunflower yellow sleeper.
The last time I wore it was on a romantic picnic with a sleazy guy who said he was a dentist, then ghosted me.
Ghosted you? I wasn't sure I understood the term.
He disappeared, and so did the bracelet.
How could anyone do this to such a kind young woman? Obviously doing her best in such difficult circumstances. I silently cursed him. It reminded me of something similar that had happened recently to my friend Silvana, and it made my blood boil. I stifled my inner outrage and asked if there was anything I could do. She smiled and shook her head. She and Quinn, the baby, didn't need any help. They were fine, they were good. Although her extended family lived in Vancouver, and she didn't have much of a support network. It was the last day of swimming lessons. We weren't likely to run into each other again, but I suggested we exchange names and phone numbers, just in case she ever needed another pair of hands. Her name was Paige Sauvé. Chapter 2. Reflections on a Theme. One of the most frustrating things about getting on in years is forgetfulness. A few years ago, it felt like I'd lost all my nouns. I'm over that. The parts of speech are now all present and accounted for, thank you very much. But lately, I feel like I'm losing plots. No, I haven't lost the plot, as some people describe dementia. But suddenly I can revisit old books, TV shows, and movies, and still be surprised by the plot twists. I enjoy that, but I miss the razor-sharp memory I once had for events, conversations, and people's names. Paige's story haunted me. It rang a bell somewhere deep down in my imperfect memory banks, and I wished I could remember why. I drove home from the pool and greeted my dog somewhat absently. I sat in the backyard tossing tennis balls for her to catch, fetch, hide, and chew on. We go through a lot of tennis balls. In fact, it was when I went to buy more tennis balls that the penny dropped. The Canadian Tire store in Orleans was the biggest in Canada until a few years ago. And it's still impressive. As the line to the cash snaked around all the tempting small items, like wind-up rechargeable radio flashlights, essential in a power failure, and liquid soap for blowing bubbles, hours of fun, I thought I recognized the young woman at the cash. She might have had longer hair last time, but now it was very short, what they call a pixie cut, and it suited her sturdy build and lively, capable, ready-for-anything manner. Finally, it was my turn, and I could read her name tag. Nicole Paquette.
Did you find everything you were looking for? Need a few high-quality rackets to go with these balls? We also have complete pickleball sets. everyone's all about pickleball these days.
No thanks, I smile. These are for my dog.
And he doesn't like pickleball.
She, I corrected. Not that Maggie May's gender matters much.
Gender does matter, though. Even these days, it's tough to be a woman in this Canadian tire world.
Getting Canadian tired?
Getting a degree in mechanical engineering.
Mechanical engineering? Wow, good for you. I paused, thinking. Did we have a conversation a month or so ago? She looked at me quizzically.
Maybe? About something you bought or returned?
About something you lost after a picnic date.
Oh, my silver pen. Did I tell you about that? Graduation present from my parents. They hoped it would bring me luck in engineering school.
She shrugged.
I'm sad I lost the pen, but I'm doing fine in school. Mind you, I'd love to kick a certain someone in the you-know-what.
Me too, I said. You're not the only one he's ripped off. She looked intrigued, but got busy with the next customer, and I went home. A few weeks later, I heard a strangely similar story at the bank. My washing machine was on the fritz, and the repairman couldn't come until next week. So I grabbed Maggie May's leash, put her in the car, and took a load to the laundromat on Saint Joseph, only to realize that I didn't have enough coins. We got back in the car and headed to my Scotiabank branch in the Place d'Orléans shopping center. It was a hot day, and I didn't like to leave Maggie May in the car. So I snapped her leash to a bike rack just outside the mall entrance and went in. As I joined the queue, Jaden Lee waved at me from behind one of the wickets. I'd dealt with her many times over the years, and it was nice to see her friendly face. The bank wasn't busy. One or two people ahead of me, and a young woman sitting to the side. I stayed in the lineup and let the others go ahead to the other tellers until she was free. "Hi, Jaden," I said. "Long time no see." She smiled, her flawless skin dimpling on either side of her gorgeous red lipstick.
"I'm guessing you do your banking online these days?"
"Yes," I said, handing her my bank card. "But today, I need coins for the laundromat." As she counted out the loonies and toonies, I admired her asymmetrical haircut, her freshly ironed white blouse, and crisp green wool jacket. But something was missing. "Where's your grandmother's jade brooch?"
"Oh,"
she rolled her eyes.
"I'm pretty sure it was stolen."
"What happened? Did you call the police?"
"No, I just felt so stupid. I went on a date, a romantic picnic at Princess Louise Falls, but I never got the guy's phone number, and I didn't miss my brooch until the next day."
"Oh my goodness," I said, annoyed. "This is the third time I've heard that picnic story. One girl lost a precious charm bracelet, and another a silver pen."
"A serial picnicker. Another case for the Miss Marple of Orleans?"
"You heard about that?"
"Everyone reads the Orleans Journal. You're famous."
"Luckily, I can still do my laundry on Saint Joseph without getting mobbed," I laughed. "Seriously, though, Jaden, I wonder if we should get you all together to compare notes. Maybe between the three of you, you could come up with enough to take to the police."
"I'm in. Name the time and place. I'm free Saturday at 2 p.m. if that works for everyone else."
"Would you like to come to my place?" "Hang on," I said when she nodded. I glanced over my shoulder. The lineup was gone. The bank was empty except for the young woman sitting in the waiting area, reading her phone. "Why don't I text Paige right now?" Paige replied almost immediately. She was on call for work that day, but as far as she knew, she and Quinn were available on Saturday at 2 o'clock. I sent her my address. I called Canadian Tire and left a message for Nicole to call me back. I told Jaden I would let her know if Nicole confirmed. Outside, Maggie May was having the time of her life. The young woman I'd seen waiting at the bank was crouched by the dog, whispering, "Good girl," patting her and tickling her ears. In her old-fashioned, flowered, long-sleeved cotton midi dress, with a scarf around her neck, she reminded me of the demure young women you see in TV shows about sister wives and other communal living arrangements.
"Is this your dog? I love dogs, but I'm a bit allergic to them."
She sneezed, blew her nose into a tissue, and used another one to dab the corners of her eyes under her glasses. That's too bad, I said. People aren't usually allergic to multi-poos.
Is that what she is?
She rasped.
Sorry, I seem to have lost my voice. She's a beautiful dog.
Thanks, I said, unclipping the leash from the bike rack. She hesitated.
I didn't mean to eavesdrop, but I couldn't help but overhear your conversation with that stylish teller.
Jaden? Yes?
Thing is, maybe the same thing happened to me. A great guy invited me on the picnic. We had a wonderful time, but now I can't find my favorite earrings. My name is Courtney, by the way. Courtney Nairn.
Nice to meet you, Courtney. I'm Mabel Maple. Did you hear that I'm inviting the others to come to my house at 2 o'clock on Saturday? Would you like to come too? She blew her nose again and shook her head.
Oh no, I'm sorry. I love the earrings, but I can't visit people I don't know.
I frowned and said gently, did you know the man you went on the date with? My tone wasn't gentle enough. She stared at me, her eyes red and rimmed with tears.
No, and losing those earrings was my punishment. They meant a lot to me.
I touched her arm. Courtney, if you can add anything to the conversation, it could help everyone get their things back. What did he call himself? She whispered the name, then recoiled slightly and pulled her arm away.
I can't add anything else. I'm no good in crowds. I'm a bit shy.
Would you like to give me your phone number in case there's any news?
No, thank you. But could I maybe call you afterwards, if you don't mind?
My heart went out to this introverted, vulnerable kid. I rummaged in my purse, found an old car wash receipt, and on the back of it I wrote my name, address, and phone number. Saturday at 2, I said, in case you change your mind. My phone rang. It was Nicole, agreeing to the meeting, so I picked up Maggie May and popped back into the bank to tell Jaden we were all set. I also updated her on Courtney, but by the time I came back out, the sad young woman was gone. Thanks for listening to A Fine Romance, Part 1, Episode 7 of Miss Maple Mysteries, written and performed by Kathy McClellan with production by John Nolan, and additional voices from John Nolan, Rosemary Nolan, and William Ballack. Our company is Rag and Bone Puppet Theatre, and you can visit our website at ragandbone.ca. Join us next time for A Fine Romance, Part 2, Episode 8. Mabel unravels a hidden plot behind the series of suspicious romantic picnics at Princess Louise Falls.